A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In a black-and-white film, titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Lana Turner as Cora Smith and John Garfield as Frank Chambers in The Postman Always Rings Twice. The title appears on the cover of a book, a novel by James M. Cain, copyright 1946. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, described by Alice Austin, read by Peter Haydu, funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Titles continue, with Cecil Kellaway as Nick Smith, Hume Cronin as Arthur Keats, Leon Ames as Kyle Sackett, Audrey Totter as Madge Gorland, and Alan Reed as Ezra Liam Kennedy. Produced by Carrie Wilson. Screenplay by Harry Ruskin and Niven Bush, based on the novel by James M. Cain. Musical score, George Bassman. Film editor, George White. Directed by Tay Garnett. Now a cardboard sign reads, Man Wanted.
It was on a side road outside of Los Angeles. I was hitchhiking from San Francisco down to San Diego, I guess. A half hour earlier, I thumbed a ride.
A chrome-trimmed sedan pulls up to a service station. A young, dark-haired man gets out with a suitcase.
Well, so long, mister. Thanks for the ride, the three cigarettes, and for not laughing at my theories on life.
But you broke off right in the middle of a sentence. Why do you keep looking for new places, new people, new ideas?
Well, I never liked any job I ever had. Maybe the next one is the one I've always been looking for.
Not worried about your future?
Well, I got plenty of time for that. Besides...
He looks at the wanted sign.
Maybe my future starts right now.
Well, good luck. Maybe I'll be seeing you again.
Thanks for the ride, mister.
The driver, a middle-aged man with a thin mustache, pulls away. A police officer on a motorcycle passes the young drifter and parks behind the now-pulled-over sedan. The cop saunters up to the driver, tips his hat back, and leans in. The cop straightens, smiles awkwardly, and backs away with an apologetic salute. As he walks to his motorcycle, the young man approaches him.
He slipped you something, huh?
Yeah, that's right, brother. I stick my head in the window and say real tough-like. Parking in the middle of the highway, huh? Who do you think you are? He slipped me three little words.
Three little words?
Yeah. He says the district attorney. That's right, the old DA himself. He lives just down the road here a piece.
As the cop rides off, the young man heads toward the service station. A stout older man jogs out of an adjacent diner to meet him, passing a lighted sign, Twin Oaks.
Good morning, my friend.
I'll tell you all about that job. All you gotta do is to, you know, help around the place.
Well, right now I got a certain trouble that keeps me from working.
You look healthy.
My feet. They keep itching for me to go places. But it's a nice place you got around here. How's the food?
I'll make you a wonderful hamburger, free of charge.
Yeah?
Just to show you the kind of food that goes with the job. Do you know anything about automobiles?
Oh, I'm a born mechanic.
Well, sit down.
The drifter sits at a lunch counter.
Of course, the job doesn't pay all the money in the world, you know. But you got no expenses. You eat and sleep right here. A fine bed, box spring and mattress. Fresh air, sunshine. Boy, you'll be living.
Suppose I try it for a couple of days.
Yeah. Oh. Uh-oh. Customer.
Go ahead. We're not going to make any money in here. I'll look after the hamburger.
Thanks.
The stout man rushes to the door.
Talk away.
A white lipstick case rolls across the floor. The drifter's gaze follows its path and stops at a woman's white peep-toe heels. Leggy blonde, wearing short shorts and a V-neck halter top, stands in a doorway leading to a set of carpeted stairs. With her hair tightly wrapped in a scarf, she stares at the young man as he moves toward her, stopping to pick up the lipstick.
You drop this?
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
She holds out her empty hand as she studies her smile in a compact. The young man leans back against the counter and coolly watches her. She glances toward him and eyes the lipstick in his outstretched hand. Meeting his gaze, she sashays toward him and takes the lipstick. She strolls back to the doorway, opens her compact, and casually coats her full lips. With a lick of her lip, she shoots the young drifter a sideways glance and walks out the door to the adjoining hallway. The young man's nose twitches. He looks around and spots the smoking burger on the grill. Rushing behind the counter, he scoops the burning patty into a trash can. He hops over the counter and jogs out the screen door. Outside, he lays the Man Wanted sign on a small pile of burning debris. The stout owner approaches.
That's it. Burn it up. I can tell my wife you're going to stay.
Your wife?
Frowning, the young man rescues the sign. He looks toward the leggy woman poised in the diner doorway, then bites his lip and drops the sign into the flames. Later, the wife comes downstairs wearing a white dress with a keyhole neckline, her platinum blonde hair curled softly around her face. She notices the drifter in the diner, then flicks on a light in the adjoining living room.
Oh, turn that off, Cora. The electric light company's making enough money.
Her husband counts on his fingers at a desk.
My Cora, you look lovely tonight.
Thank you, Nick.
He turns back to his work.
Nick. That man you hired today.
Frank?
Well, if that's his name, why don't you give him a week's salary and let him go?
A week's pay for nothing?
Well, we can get along without him.
Oh, no, I don't want to be too hasty. He's working pretty cheap. You know that Los Angeles butcher's been cheating me?
Yes, I know. He's been charging you U.S. choice prices for U.S. goods.
Yeah, but we'll fix him.
As Nick counts to himself, Cora clenches her jaw. She shoots an unsettled glance toward the diner, then heads in. As she enters, Frank glances up briefly from his newspaper, a cigarette dangling from his lips. Cocking her head slightly, Cora strides over.
My husband tells me your name is Frank.
That's right.
Well, Frank, around here, you'll kindly do your reading on your own time.
Your husband, Nick, told me I was through for the day, and I thought he was boss around here.
The best way to get my husband to fire you would be not doing what I tell you to do.
Well, you haven't asked me to do anything yet.
Cora's gaze hardens, and she glances around.
I want all these chairs painted.
All right. I'll look in the paper. Maybe I can find a sale on some cheap paint.
You won't find anything cheap around here.
She gives a sly smile.
Look in the cupboard under the counter.
Grinning, Frank folds the paper and stubs out his cigarette. He ambles past Cora toward the lunch counter and finds a tin of paint behind it.
Well, as my friend Nick would say, that's wonderful. Next time anybody makes a trip into town, they can pick up a paintbrush.
Look on the bottom shelf.
He hesitates, then checks the cupboard.
Well, what do you know about that?
He fingers the bristles of a brush, and Cora gives him a satisfied smile.
Why didn't you start this campaign of rehabilitation before I came? Or were you waiting for me?
Nick was saving that paint.
Nick saves a lot of things.
It's none of your business what he saves.
I didn't say it was. Only when I have something, I don't save it. What do you want to paint these chairs for? They look all right to me.
Because I want to make something of this place. I want to make it into an honest-to-goodness...
Well... Aren't we ambitious?
He steps close to her.
We want to make a lot of money so we can buy lots of pretty clothes. Or maybe we want to put a little aside for our husband and us in our old age.
Frank grabs her and plants a kiss on her lips. They separate and stare face to face for a moment before Cora pulls away. She calmly removes a handkerchief and compact from her dress pocket and wipes her smudged lipstick. She looks him up and down, then reapplies her makeup and wets her full lower lip. With an indifferent glance, she strides out the living room door.
For a couple of weeks, then, she wouldn't look at me or say a word to me if she could help it. I began to feel like a cheap nobody making a play for a girl that had no use for me. Oh, I disturbed her. I knew
she hated me for that worst of all.
Nighttime. Outside, the wind blows down the Twin Oak sign. Daytime. Frank jogs inside carrying a car's vent window. In the kitchen, he finds Cora washing dishes. She wears a fitted white dress with short sleeves. Sunlight streams through the blinds onto her porcelain face.
Customer wants this washed off. Needs hot water.
He nudges his way to the sink.
Trying to figure a way to get that sign back.
Well, don't bother.
No bother. All I need is a stepladder.
I don't want the sign put back, Mr. Busybody. Been trying to get a new sign for 2 years.
Maybe there are some things you don't know how to sell.
Oh, no.
Hello there.
Nick.
You know, Frank, I've been thinking you must be in love. Hardly eat any lunch. She doesn't get any letters. I guess his best girl's got another fella.
Too hot to eat. Funny climate you get around here. The hotter the wind blows, the hotter it gets.
Yeah, we call that wind the Santiana. It comes from the desert.
Nick, why don't you let me take your car? I'll run that sign into town and get it fixed.
Okay. Take it to the electric company. They did it for nothing last time.
Well, sure, why not? They make a fortune out of it every month.
Now you're talking like the neon sign salesman.
I know, but a neon sign would only burn a quarter as much juice. But, Nick, that's not the point.
It isn't?
Well, no. What's the purpose of a sign around here?
Show people where they can get something to eat, I suppose.
Not for my money. A sign is supposed to give people an appetite. And your sign doesn't make me hungry.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. But I'm too busy to talk about it now.
He leaves. Cora turns to Frank, beaming.
He's hooked.
Frank steps close.
I could sell anything to anybody.
Cora's smile fades.
That's what you think.
Turning away, she pulls out a cigarette. Frank lights a match with his thumbnail and holds the flame in front of her. Ignoring him, Cora places the cigarette between her lips, picks up a book of matches, and tries to light one. With an amused smile, Frank holds out his lit match. Cora hesitates, then dips her cigarette into the flame.
Tell me one thing. How did you ever come to marry a guy like that?
Is that any of your business?
Maybe.
They glance away. Planting her fist on her hip, Cora glances at Frank as he leaves. Nighttime. In the front yard, a neon sign glows Twin Oaks, lunch, breakfast, dinner. Stark light flashes across Cora and Frank as they admire the sign.
Maybe it's none of my business, but what's Nick sore about?
He's so crazy about the sign, he's afraid you'll claim it's your idea instead of his.
Yeah? Watch.
He winks and heads into the living room.
Nick, I've seen many a sign in my time, but that's the daddy of them all. I certainly got to hand it to you.
Why, Frank?
Well, there I was trying to get the old one fixed up, and already you'd seen the neon salesman, and bingo! A new sign, prettier than a Christmas tree.
Thanks, Frank. Did it make you hungry?
Thirsty.
Sure. Celebrate.
Thanks.
Frank pours himself a drink, then offers it to Cora as she enters. As Nick tunes a small guitar, Cora smiles and takes a seat on the arm of a chair.
Sing something, Nick.
Okay. I'm not much to look at, nothing to see.
Frank smiles at Cora, and she looks sternly away.
To be, I've got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. Go on, Cora, do a little dance for us. Cora's a wonderful dancer.
I feel silly dancing alone. But start the jukebox, Nick, and I'll dance with you.
Listen to her, Frank. I'm always telling her I'm like a lot of smart men. My brains are not in my feet.
How about me dancing with Mrs. Smith?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Cora.
She gapes.
I prefer to watch dancing.
This is silly. You can't dance in here.
I've got an idea. Try in here. There's lots of room.
But, Nick, I've practically forgotten how to dance.
Oh, you're wonderful, and you know it.
Nick, I don't want to dance.
Go on, don't be silly. Enjoy yourself. Go ahead, Cora.
In the dark diner, Frank slides a coin into a jukebox. As Nick strums his guitar, Frank takes Cora's hand and pulls her close. They move across the floor, rocking in a smooth tango. Cora gazes dreamily at Frank, then closes her eyes and allows herself to move closer to him, their lips only inches apart. Her eyes flash as she glances over his face. Clenching her jaw, she pushes herself away and pulls the plug on the jukebox.
Save your strength, Nick. It's too hot to dance.
Cora, you left the new sign burning.
Cora frowns as Nick walks away.
Nick, I think I'll drive to the beach and have a swim.
Sure, that's a wonderful idea. You haven't been out of this place for 30 days.
Won't you come with me?
No. I'll just stay here and celebrate the new sign.
All right.
Outside, Cora wears a hip-length coat over her bathing suit. Twirling a bathing cap, she climbs into the passenger side of a light-colored sedan. She slides across the seat and bumps into Frank.
Climb right in. It's okay. Nick said it was all right with him if it's all right with you.
Cora eyes him suspiciously, then shrugs and stares ahead. Frank grins and starts the car. Later, on a secluded, moonlit beach, Cora buckles her bathing cap as Frank unties his long robe.
Let's not stay too long. I'd like to do this again.
Don't worry. You'll find this night air can get awfully cold in a very few minutes.
Frank drops his robe, exposing his lean, muscular chest and tight black swim trunks. He stares as Cora slips off her heels and jacket, revealing her shapely figure in a white two-piece bathing suit. She runs down the sloping sand and dives into the surf, with Frank following close behind. Later, Frank treads water in the glimmering ocean. Cora swims up from behind and pulls him under. Bobbing back up, Frank paddles after her. Silhouetted by moonlight, Frank follows Cora in on a foaming wave. They crawl out of the surf and jog up the beach. Back at the diner, Cora and Frank get out of the car and head toward the front steps. Cora stops.
Oh, do you like lemon meringue pie?
Well, I don't know.
I'll make you some tomorrow.
A light comes on above the front door and Nick steps out. Cora gives him an unsteady smile.
It's you, Cora. I thought it was a customer wanting gas.
Were you worried?
No. Only I didn't expect you back so soon. Good night, Frank.
Nick goes in and turns out the light. In the shadows, Cora fidgets. Frank slips his hands around her waist.
Please don't.
He draws her close and kisses her passionately. Her fingers clutch his shoulders, and she presses herself against him. Reluctantly pushing away, she hurries to the front door.
Cora.
She slips inside, and Frank peers through the screen.
Cora.
Daytime. At the gas pumps, Frank hands a clipboard to a truck driver.
The next day we were so busy, I hardly had a chance to look at her. Not until the middle of the morning. There was always a lull about that time. And Nick had just left for L.A.
In the diner, a white-haired gentleman eats a pastry at the counter. Frank, wearing his work smock, walks behind the counter and impatiently wipes it down with a rag. The man glances at him, takes a bite of food and a sip of coffee. Frank stops cleaning. He leans directly in front of the elderly man and stares at him. The man glances up and takes another hurried bite and sip of coffee. He stares back at Frank, his brow furrowed. Placing a coin on the counter, the man picks up his fedora and walks out. With a boyish grin, Frank picks up the coin, flips it, and tosses it into the cash register. He crosses to the screen door, looks out, and locks it. Striding back to the kitchen, he finds Cora doing dishes in her white headscarf and short-sleeved dress.
Nick just had another brainstorm and drove into town. This time it's the laundry service that's cheating him.
As she scrubs a plate, Frank puts his hands on her arms and gazes at her. Cora frowns, then turns to him and smiles.
Frank, about that question.
What question?
Why I married Nick.
My answer is that Nick came along at the right time and with a wedding ring.
The wedding ring was the first thing he mentioned.
And you liked it for a certain reason.
You don't know the half of it. Frank, I hate to say this, but I wasn't ever homely, so...
You must have had to fight off a lot of guys.
A lot of guys? All the guys. I don't especially like the way I look sometimes, but I never met a man since I was 14 that didn't want to give me an argument about it.
Sure. By the time Nick came along, well, you were ready to marry anybody that owned the gold watch.
It seemed the best thing to do for my ankle. And as for him, I told him I didn't love him.
He said that would come in time.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
But I meant to stick by him, and that's why...
That's why you married him and retired. The undefeated champ.
Not 100% undefeated. Not now. What's that?
Somebody trying to come in.
Is the door locked?
I must have locked it.
Whoever it was, they went away.
They melt into a kiss. Now a handwritten note. Nick, I'm going away with Frank. I love him. Cora. She tucks the note into the cash register drawer. Later, outside, she hands Frank her suitcase.
Too bad Nick took the car.
Even if the car were here, we couldn't take it. Not unless we wanted to spend the first night in jail. Stealing a man's wife, that's nothing. But stealing his car, that's larceny.
Later, they walk down a two-lane road. A passing car just misses them. Cora stumbles to the ground. In a cloud of dust, she grimaces as Frank helps her up. Dirt smudges her white blouse and straight white skirt. She tries to brush it off. She glares briefly at Frank, who grins and walks on unruffled. Farther down the road, Cora steps in a puddle of motor oil. Kicking up more dirt, she scrapes the sole of her white shoe on the dusty pavement and walks on. As the sun beats down, Nick tries to hail a cargo truck. It cruises by. Cora, her forehead glistening with sweat, squints at a shiny black sedan that passes them by. She yanks a beret off her head and runs her fingers through her matted hair.
Hey, you're not tired already, are you?
A little.
Come on, let's sit down for a minute. Here.
On the side of the road, they sit on their suitcases.
Don't worry. We'll get a lift in a minute.
Cora frowns.
Frank, look. If I divorce Nick, he'll never give me a nickel. He'll keep the Twin Oaks and everything.
Well, what do we care?
Yeah, but where are we headed?
What's the difference? Anywhere.
Oh, anywhere. Do you know where that is?
Well, anywhere we choose.
No, it isn't. It's back to the hash house for me, and for you, some parking lot where you wear a smock with super service on it. I would just die if I saw you in a smock like that.
But I wore one at the Twin Oaks.
But that was mine. Oh, don't you see, Frank? You're smart. Others could be wearing the smocks, and you could be manager.
Yeah, I can hardly wait.
Oh, stop acting. You're ashamed of being smart. Well, I'm ashamed of standing out here begging for a ride that'll take me right back where I started.
You mean you want to go back, huh?
I want to be somebody. If I walk out like this, I'll lose everything, and I'll never be anybody.
Her face softens.
Oh, I love you, Frank, and I want you, but not this way. Not starting out like a couple of tramps.
She swallows stiffly.
I'm going back.
Cora looks apologetically at Frank and walks away. He picks up the suitcases and follows her. On the road, Cora grins and straightens her skirt as they walk. Her smile fades.
Frank!
What's the matter now?
The note I wrote for Nick. If he gets home before we do.
Where'd you leave it?
In the cash register.
Great. That's the first place you'll look, too.
Look, here comes the bus. Stop it.
He hesitates, staring at her.
All right.
Frank waves, and the bus pulls over. Later, at Twin Oaks, Cora runs ahead of Frank toward the diner. Dropping her white jacket on the front steps, she fumbles with a key in the lock, then opens the door. Inside, she hurries behind the counter to the register, opens the drawer, and grabs the note. Slumping against the wall, she wipes her forehead with the back of her hand. Frank takes the note from her, reads it, then looks at her longingly. He leans toward her, but she slips past him and walks over to a front window. He shoves the crumpled note into his pocket.
Frank! Frank, look, it's Nick!
His car speeds toward a truck.
Look out!
The truck swerves and misses.
That was close. I'd like to see him get plastered like that some night and drive off a cliff.
You didn't mean that. You were joking.
Sure. I was joking.
Of course you were. Of course.
A smile plays on her lips.
Well, I better change quick.
She leaves. Outside, Nick climbs out of his sedan, carrying a wrapped bundle. Pausing to gain his balance, he straightens his tie, then places his foot carefully on the first step.
Why did I leave her?
Entering the diner, Nick staggers toward Frank.
Don't look now, but I'm a little high. And did I fix those laundry people and make them like it? Frank, I even made them pay with the beer.
Why don't you jump in a cold shower?
Yeah. I'm going to. Because I'm not only a little high, I'm higher than the kite.
He notices Frank's sport coat.
What's the idea of having good clothes? You're not going to quit on me, are you? What's the matter, Frank? Don't you like the food? Oh, maybe you and I can get together on it.
Nick spots the two suitcases. He frowns.
What's the big idea of the suitcases?
Now, take it easy, Nick.
What were you stealing in those suitcases?
Wait a minute.
I might have known. I take in a hobo off the road, hungry. And the moment I've got my back turned, he tries to rob me.
I'm not a thief.
You can prove that to me by opening up those suitcases.
Cora comes downstairs wearing her white Twin Oaks uniform. She watches them through the doorway.
Come on, open up those suitcases.
Well, what's all the argument about?
He's a thief, Cora. Look at those suitcases. I just got back in time.
You're crazy, Nick. Well, Frank's not a thief. All of a sudden this afternoon, he got an attack of road fever. Said his feet were itching for a new place. So he came in to say goodbye with a suitcase.
With two suitcases, you mean? One of them full of our stuff.
Oh, you've had too much beer, Nick. Sure, the other one was our suitcase, but you know Frank's bought a lot of new things since he's been here, and I told him he could have it in exchange for the 3 days' pay he had coming.
Nick grins.
That's a pretty good bargain, Cora. I'm sorry, Frank. My boy, that road fever's never going to get you anywhere.
Oh, but that's all settled, darling. Frank's road fever wasn't very serious. In fact, he forgot all about it as soon as I promised you'd pay him $3 more a week.
Good girl. Now, if I'm really smart, I'll keep my big mouth shut and go and take that shower.
Cora beams as Nick weaves toward the doorway. Stumbling over the threshold, he drops his bundle of laundry.
That's all right, Nick. I'll pick them up.
What's the difference if they do get dirty? I got to wash for free.
Cora turns to Frank. With a concerned gaze, she picks up a suitcase and holds it out to him. He snatches it away from her, starts to leave, then stops. Taking a deep breath, he turns back to Cora, who gives him a heavy-lidded stare. Frank sets down the suitcase and reaches toward her. Glancing at the ceiling, Cora shakes her head and gently pushes him away.
Right then, I should have walked out of that place, but I couldn't make myself do it. She had me licked, and she knew it. So for a week, she treated me as if I was only somebody working around the place. I nearly went out of my mind. I couldn't go, and I couldn't stay the way things were. And one night, I decided I had to have a talk with her. to see if there wasn't some future, some way for the two of us.
Nighttime. Outside the diner, Frank spots a light on in the house. Wearing a bathrobe, he peers in a window and spies Nick and Cora in the living room.
She's funny that way.
While Nick sings, Cora reclines on a plaid sofa and brushes dust off one of her white heels. Her gaze drifts toward the window, and she notices Frank. He jerks his head, motioning for her to come outside. Staring blankly, she slowly shakes her head no. Frank winces and motions again. Raising her eyebrows, Cora mouths the word no and goes back to brushing her shoe. Later, in his bedroom, Frank drops onto the bed and stares at the wall. The door opens. Cora, wearing her white keyhole necklined dress, slips carefully inside and sags against the closed door, her blonde curls shining in the lamplight.
What are we going to do?
That's great, coming from you, after you've been high-hatting me the way you have.
But what else could I do? Oh, Frank. Frank, if I'd only met you first.
Well?
Frank, do you love me?
Yes.
Do you love me so much that nothing else matters?
Yes.
There's one thing we could do that would fix everything for us.
What? Pray for something to happen to Nick?
Something like that.
Cora.
Well, you suggested it yourself once, didn't you?
I was only joking.
Were you?
Yes, I was.
Why, had you started to think about it a little?
Maybe I said it, but I didn't really mean it.
Well, I say it again now, and I do mean it.
Cora.
Listen to me, Frank. I'm not what you think I am. I want to keep this place and work hard and be something, that's all.
She glances down.
But you can't do it without love. At least a woman can. I've made a big mistake in my life, and I've got to be this way just once to fix it.
But they hang you for a thing like that.
Oh, but not if you do it right, and you're smart, Frank. You'll think of a way. Plenty of men have.
He never did anything to me.
But, darling, can't you see how happy you and I would be together here? Without him.
Frank's jaw slackens as he studies her face.
Do you love me, Cora?
That's why you've got to help me. It's because I do love you.
Yes, you do. You couldn't get me to say yes to a thing like this if you didn't.
Later, in a garage, Frank pours ball bearings into his cupped hand.
I guess I worked out the details, but the original plan was hers. She got it from an article in a magazine that said that the most serious accidents happen right in people's homes, mostly right in their own bathtubs.
In the kitchen, Cora irons a lacy slip. As Frank enters behind her, she looks up, then resumes her ironing. He approaches and sets a sack of ball bearings on the ironing board.
Will you be able to hear the bathtub water running from down here?
Can't help hearing it. Besides, he always starts to sing when he turns the water on.
We're going to sink or swim in how we tell that story.
Well, I won't miss. Nick was taking a bath. You were outside wiping off the car. I was ironing in the kitchen. All of a sudden, I noticed some water dripping from the ceiling.
Maybe we'd better save it.
Don't change a word of it. We've got it all set, and I know it backwards.
All right. But make sure he's in the tub when you go in, and just say you came in to get some clean towels. And then, when he's not looking yet...
They both look down at the sack. Frank's gaze shifts to Cora as she stares tight-lipped at the ball bearings. Standing the iron on end, she wrings her hands, looks up at Frank, and swallows hard.
And then what do you do?
And I lock the door. I make sure the water is still running. I step out the window, down the stepladder.
Be sure you put the stepladder back in the shed. If anybody sees that stepladder, we're sunk.
And don't you dare move 1 inch away from that car in case anyone comes along.
Don't worry, if I give you the signal, you call everything off pronto.
But nobody ever stops here when all the lights are out in front.
Cora, maybe it would be better if I did it.
Oh, we've settled that a dozen times. If I go in there, he won't pay any attention to me.
They look up at the ceiling. Slowly, their gazes meet. As Cora glances around nervously, Frank gives her arm a gentle squeeze, then walks out of the kitchen. As Cora picks up the iron, her hand brushes the sack of ball bearings. She fingers it for a moment, biting her lip, then starts to iron again. Outside the diner, Frank leans an 8-foot stepladder against a wall next to an exposed fuse box. A second-story window in the adjoining house casts light onto the diner's low roof. Frank walks away, staring back at the window, then brushes a hand across his lip and strides briskly toward Nick's car parked in the driveway. In the kitchen, Cora cocks her head and looks up at the ceiling. Outside, Frank glances around cautiously as he cleans the car windshield with a rag. Frank tenses and reaches for the car horn as a truck approaches. It passes, and Frank hesitantly goes back to cleaning. Sweat beads on his brow. Looking toward the kitchen window, he sees Cora glance at the ceiling, take a deep breath, and walk away from her ironing. Glad I'm living, lucky to be. I got a woman. Frank wets his lips as he absently wipes the rag on the windshield, then stops and looks up. I can't save a dollar. His gaze tightens, and he reaches for the horn. A car passes. A cat rubs against the base of the ladder. Running over, Frank picks up a stone and hurls it. Frank whirls around and gapes as the motorcycle cop pulls up beside Nick's car.
That your car?
Belongs to the fellow I work for.
Oh, hello. Yeah, so it does. Okay, just checking up. What's that?
What's what?
The cop shines a flashlight on the ladder.
Well, look at that.
What is it?
Well, that doggone cat climbing up that step ladder.
The striped cat looks around from the third step.
I like cats. Always up to something.
The cop leaves, and Frank hurries back to the car. At the top of the ladder, the cat steps on the fuse box, and sparks fly. The lights go out. Frank races into the diner and runs into Cora.
Shut up. Are you crazy screaming like that? Did you do it?
What happened? All the lights went out.
It was a cat. A fool cat jumped on a wire and blew out of it. And Cora, did you do it?
Yes, I did do it. Before I had a chance to do anything else, the lights went out. He's unconscious, but he's still breathing.
Did he see you do it?
I don't know.
We gotta bring him to.
No.
Listen, you little fool. There was a state cop out there, and he saw that stepladder.
Oh, but Frank, Nick must come too.
He's got to. If he dies, we're sunk. The cop saw that stepladder. If he dies, they'll know. If he dies, they'll get us. I'll get him out of there. You phone a doctor, Cora.
But suppose he saw me. What's he going to say?
Get on that phone and call a doctor.
Frank rushes off, and Cora dials the phone.
Operator, this is Twin Oaks. I want a doctor. Any doctor, quick. There's been an accident. But I don't want an ambulance. I want a doctor.
Later, in a hospital corridor, Cora leans against a doorway as Frank paces.
Frank, will you please stop?
An officer escorts a man in a dark suit down the hallway. It's the district attorney.
Oh, so it's you.
Hello. The boss, Mr. Smith, he had an accident.
So I heard. This is Mrs. Smith, isn't it?
Yes.
This is the district attorney, Mrs. Smith. He lives near your place.
My name is Sackett.
How do you do, Mr. Sackett?
What happened?
Cora's lip trembles.
Well, I went in there to the bathroom, to get some towels.
He was in there?
Yes, just standing up in the tub. All of a sudden, there was a big flash of fire and a terrible noise, and the lights went out all over the house. I heard him fall, but it was so dark, so I...
The doctor thinks you'd better come in now.
Thank
you. Cora follows the nurse into a room. With a quizzical frown, the DA enters behind Frank. Inside, a doctor examines Nick.
He seems to be coming back into consciousness now.
Doctor, is he going to...
I'm afraid I can't make any promises. That's why I called you in.
The doctor steps aside, and Cora leans over Nick. He lies unconscious, wrapped in white linens.
Nick.
He doesn't stir.
Nick.
His drowsy eyes slowly open and fix on the ceiling.
Nick, it's me. Cora.
Shifting his gaze, Nick's jaw slackens and trembles as he tries to speak. Behind Cora, Frank and Mr. Sackett move closer. Nick closes his eyes. Pinching her brow, Cora shakes her head.
Don't you even know your own wife?
Her eyes shift.
And aren't you ashamed of yourself falling down in the bathtub like a little boy? Just because the lights went out.
Sackett and Frank glance at each other.
Nick, aren't you going to speak to me?
Her wedding band glints as she takes Nick's hand in her long, slender fingers. Slowly he opens his eyes, his mouth agape.
Everything went dark.
Frank glances nervously at the DA, who studies him, then looks at Nick.
What happened?
Cora closes her eyes, relieved. Behind her, the doctor taps Frank on the arm, then opens the door. He follows Frank and the DA out. Later, outside the hospital, Cora hugs her white jacket around her as she hurries down the front steps. Pausing at the bottom, she notices a parked motorcycle, then walks quickly toward Frank, who waits at the car. Behind her, Mr. Sackett exits the hospital with a police officer. Cora slides into the car next to Frank.
Quick, what happened?
Stuck to my story.
Same thing here.
Well, Frank, what are we going to do? They know something's wrong. Suppose Nick dies.
That's what we've got to figure on right now.
Frank backs up and pulls out past the cop and the DA. On the road, he checks the rearview mirror, then glances over his shoulder.
I thought so. There's that cop. I'll lay a 10-1 it's the DA's car, too.
Behind them, a light-colored sedan tails the cop on his motorcycle. Frank pulls into Twin Oaks and quickly helps Cora out of the car.
Watch your step now. Business as usual, no weakness.
Yeah.
Cora frowns tensely and rushes inside. The cop pulls up in front of Frank, followed by the sedan. The DA steps out, wearing a tailored suit and a fedora.
It's me, laddie.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Sackett.
Thought I'd better have a look at that fuse box, just for the record.
I was just going to try to find some new fuses.
The cop points to the roof.
Right there, at the top of the stepladder.
What's the ladder doing here, anyway?
I noticed some insulation worn off the feed wire, but I didn't get around to fixing it.
Well, I'll be doggone. Look at that.
The charred remains of the cat.
Yeah, there's your cat.
Deader than a doornail.
That's right, remember?
Sure. We were looking at her.
She must have walked off that ladder right onto the bare wire. Boy, those fuses blew out like a cannon.
Cats are poor dumb things.
Yeah. They don't know anything about electricity.
Killed her deader than a doornail.
Yes, the cat's dead, all right. Well, accidents can happen in the weirdest sort of ways. So long, laddie.
He pats Frank's shoulder.
I never saw a prettier cat. Killed her deader than a doornail.
The cop blinks and walks away. From the diner window, Cora stares after him. Watching him go, Frank slowly heads toward the screen door, then hurries inside and embraces Cora.
Frank!
Easy, Cora, easy.
And it was all my fault.
Mine, too.
No, it was all my fault. I was the one that thought it up, and you didn't want to. But next time I'll listen to you.
Except there won't be any next time.
Oh, never, never.
Listen, baby. If Nick should die, they'll know. They always find out. They guess it right just from habit.
I guess I'm not even I thought I was. Or else I wouldn't have been so scared.
I'm plenty scared, too.
When all the lights went out, I was just a little girl again. Afraid of the dark. But from now on, you'll be the brains of this outfit, and I'll work. I'll work so hard for this place, Frank.
We can't make any plans till we find out about Nick.
Yeah, I know.
They freeze.
Answer it.
Wide-eyed, Cora walks to the phone on the wall. Frank nods to her, and she picks up the receiver.
Hello? This is Mrs. Nicholas Smith. What? Yes. Yes. Oh, thank you so much for letting me know. Goodbye. He's going to be all right. They want to keep him there for a week, but he'll be all right.
Now we can breathe again for a minute.
Just think. A week. A whole week to work things out.
You give me a big kiss before I sack you.
They share a grin. Cora hesitates.
You know, right now it's after 7 o'clock and we got to get this place going for business.
That was the happiest week I'd ever spent in my life. I wouldn't let myself thank you. And Cora wouldn't even discuss what was going to happen when Nick came home. All I cared about was her being happy. And as for me, I felt as if I was riding on a cloud.
Outside with a cop.
Look at that, a battery and a whole set of plugs. I'll say everything's fine around here. One sale. Will Mrs. Smith be tickled pink? Say, how about a nice cold drink on the house?
Nope, I gotta hurry. So your boss is coming home?
Any day now.
Today, you mean? Sure, I just passed a car coming from town. That gorgeous blonde is driving real slow and careful, and the old boy's still got a bandage on his head.
Oh, that poor little pussycat. Sure killed her.
Yep. Deader than a doornail. Remember?
Yeah.
Later, in his bedroom, Frank stuffs clothes into a small suitcase.
It was for her sake as well as mine that I knew I had to move on. If I had waited for them to get back, I wouldn't have any arguments strong enough to make her give up the place and go away with me. And if I stayed there, I could see where she and I were headed.
Now in a warehouse district.
But after a couple of weeks in L.A., I sunk low enough to hang around the wholesale market where they bought a lot of their stuff, hoping I'd run into her. I just couldn't get her out of my mind. I couldn't get her out of my mind. It kept nagging me all the time.
Frank leans against a crate of melons. He wears a white-colored shirt, a dark sport coat, and pinches a cigarette between his fingers. In a nearby lot, he notices Nick's sedan parked with the driver's door slightly ajar. He grins, tosses his cigarette, and walks briskly over to the car.
Hey, Frank! I've been looking for you all over for weeks.
Hello, Nick.
Come on, get in. We're going back to Twin Oaks.
But, Nick, I can't...
Come on, get in. Something important's going to happen tonight, and you're in on it. Besides, I want to tell you about my accident.
Later at Twin Oaks.
That's the truth. Yes, sir. I can show you the doctor's bill receipted. That little business in the bathroom that night cost me $322, believe it or not.
That's a lot of hamburgers.
Oh, no.
Cora enters.
Well, where'd you come from?
I found him near the market.
Hello, Mrs. Smith. How have you been?
Splendid, thank you. You're quite a stranger.
Frank stares, and she looks away.
Well, I've got work to do. Hope it was cooler in town.
The customer, just a minute.
Nick leaves. In the kitchen, Cora nervously fingers a broom handle. Leaning the broom against the wall, she walks to the stove and stirs a steaming pot. Frank enters and slowly steps up behind her.
Have you been thinking about me, Cora?
I couldn't forget you that quick.
Frank reaches for her. She slips away, moving to the other side of a large work table, and dishes salad out of a bowl.
How've you been?
All right.
Avoiding eye contact, she arranges salad on a plate. Frank walks around the table.
Have you got a little kiss for me?
We're going to have dinner in a few minutes, and you'd better get ready.
Cora moves back to the stove.
There's a homecoming. This is the worst flop I ever saw in my life.
He turns and walks out. At the stove, Cora spoons soup into a bowl, then bites her lip, fighting back tears. Now, an x-ray of a human skull.
Of course, they took a lot of x-ray pictures at the hospital, but this is the one that makes it look worse, see?
In the diner.
What's this, a family album?
Sure. There's my first license to sell food in Los Angeles County. And that's a snapshot of Cora and me, the day we were married. Wasn't she cute?
Just a minute, I'll put the other light on.
Nick gets up from the table and flicks on a light switch. Cora enters from the kitchen and frowns.
Well, which one of you two is working for the electric light company?
Put on the lights again, Cora, please.
She turns them on.
All right, waste your money.
The next time the electric light bill comes in, I'm not going to be here to pay it.
You're not going to be here?
No. Ah, now you made me tell the big surprise before I was ready. I'm selling the Twin Oaks.
Oh, well, that's not a very good joke.
It's not a joke. A fellow named Stanton found out they're going to turn this road into a four-lane highway, and he's offering a big price for the place.
Why sell now, and it might turn out to be a gold mine?
Yeah, but somebody's bound to come along and open up a better place across the street and put us out of business. But mainly, Corey, so as you can stop work and take it easy.
Stop work? Where? Doing what?
We're going back to live with my sister.
Your sister? Well, Nick, you never even told me you had a sister.
Well, I didn't want to worry you about her. You see, she hasn't been very well for a good many years.
Where is she?
Up in northern Canada. She got a little house up there. Of course, half of it belongs to me.
Nick, this is pretty sudden. Give me a chance to tell you what I think about it.
No, Cora. This is best.
But, Nick, please, let's talk this over.
Oh, there's nothing to talk over. I've given it a good deal of thought, and my mind's made up.
So, you've given it a good deal of thought, and your mind's made up. Without even talking it over with me, your mind's made up. Well, mine isn't.
Nick frowns at her.
It's too bad.
Cora's eyes whiten. Nick softens and turns to Frank.
You see, my sister recently became paralyzed. She can't move at all.
Cora eyes Frank.
Oh, she's going to live for a long time yet, I hope. But she needs us to take care of her. Especially you, a woman.
Nick, you mean you want me to? Nick, don't sell the place. I'm telling you, don't sell it.
Nick glances down.
Well, I'm going to sell it.
Cora's lip trembles as she glares at him. Frank watches her tensely.
I'm superstitious. I never turn down a good offer. You always regret it. I'm going to close the deal now before something happens to her.
He glances at the wall phone.
Excuse me, I'll use the extension.
Nick walks into the living room, closing the door behind him. Together, Cora and Frank rise from the table and put their ears to the door.
Hello, Mr. Stanton. This is Nicholas Smith. Oh, Mr. Stanton, you just bought a restaurant. How soon can you have the papers ready to sign?
Aye, of course, the check.
Sure, I'll come to Santa Barbara on Wednesday. Oh, Mr. Stanton, I've located that young fellow I said would make a wonderful manager. Yeah, sure, I'll bring him along. Yeah, goodbye, Mr. Stanton, till Wednesday. 10 a.m. sharp.
Cora wrings her hands as she walks back to the table. Frank follows, and Nick returns.
Now, everybody's got something to celebrate. Frank, my boy, you're going to have a first-class job of the future. And I predict that as you get along in the world, you're going to lose that itching in the feet. Cora, my dear, in the years to come, you'll thank me for this. As for me, well, I'll have enough money to live out my days in the old house where I was born. And what was good enough for my father is good enough for me, I guess. Well, come on, let's get a good night's rest. We'll close up early tomorrow, Cora. And after a nice little supper party, we'll get in the car and drive up to Santa Barbara. And at Wednesday, at 10 a.m. sharp, we'll all get ourselves set for life. Come on. Good night, Frank. Come on, Cora.
In the doorway, Nick turns out the light. He flicks it on.
Well, let Stanton have a big electric light bill. He got the place too cheap anyway.
Nick trots upstairs. With a vacant stare, Cora rises and stiffly follows, her fists clenched at her sides. Later, outside the diner, Frank paces in the shadows. As he pulls on a cigarette, smoke drifts behind him. In silhouette, a figure opens a second-floor window. Frank stops and stares up, transfixed. He lifts the cigarette to his lips, then pauses. Tossing the cigarette, he goes into the diner. Dim light filters through the Venetian blinds, casting shadows across his back as he strolls toward the living room doorway. He jerks his head toward the kitchen. Creeping silently behind the counter, Frank slowly pushes open the kitchen door. In the shadowy room, he sees Cora in a long black robe, fingering the narrow blade of a knife. Frank flicks on the light, and Cora whips around. Holding the knife flat across her palms, she stares at Frank as he paces toward her. He takes the knife, and Cora leans back against the counter, her head bowed. Frank returns the knife to an open drawer and shuts it. As Cora stares wearily across the room, Frank holds her shoulders.
Why did you come back?
I had to, that's all.
No, you didn't. I could have gone through everything if you hadn't come back. Why couldn't you just leave me alone and not come back?
Cora, let's figure something out. I love you, Cora.
She stares past him.
You love me. What do you do? You let him take me away to some miserable little dump of a town where I'll rot the rest of my life away waiting on him and his half-dead sister. You love me. I love you, but what do? You let him take me to Santa Barbara. And you even gone right along in the car with us. You're gonna stay at the same hotel with us. Why, if you really loved me, you could...
Her eyes slowly whiten. She gapes at Frank.
All right.
No.
Yeah, I can't leave you.
Well, isn't there any other way out for us?
You were just gonna put a knife in him, weren't you?
Cora glances down, her brow furrowed. She swallows.
No. That knife was for me, Frank. Not him.
He hugs her.
You love me that much?
That much?
We tried every other way. I guess it's in the cards.
Now outside the diner.
That other time it cured me of any idea we could pull a perfect murder. This was going to be such a bad murder, it wouldn't be a murder. A regular drunk automobile accident. With liquor in the car and all the rest of it.
In his car, Nick croons behind the wheel while Frank loads suitcases into the back seat. Frank pauses as a sedan pulls up to the gas pump. The DA gets out.
Closed up early?
Hello, Mr. Sackett. We're just going on a little trip. Is there anything I can get you before we close up?
I need to lay on my tires. I'll get it myself.
Cora stands at the screen door.
My bag.
Sorry, Mrs. Smith. I'll get it.
Frank follows her into the diner.
Frank, that's Sackett.
That makes it perfect. We'll have the district attorney as our witness. We'll do our act here instead of waiting till we get to the next gas station. Hop to it.
He grabs her suitcase and turns out the lights. Carrying a white purse and a closed sign, Cora walks outside, followed by Frank. As he packs the car, Cora hangs the sign on the screen door.
Come on, Nick. Let me get behind that wheel. You're too tight to drive.
Oh, no, you won't. You're as drunk as Nick is, only you don't show it.
Me drunk? Well, I'm not drunk. I'll prove it to you. Listen.
Mr. Sackett looks over.
Frank Chambers, get in that back seat.
Okay, Mrs. Smith, if you want Nick to drive, I don't want to fight with you, you know.
Nick, you shove over. You can't sing and drive at the same time.
Wearing a white suit, Cora climbs into the driver's seat. As Sackett inflates his tire, he watches them pull away. Down the road, Cora comes to a stop just past a sign that reads Malibu Lake 3. An arrow points left.
No, Cora. You keep straight on.
Well, I've always wanted to see Malibu Lake, and it's only a few miles to the other road.
Okay.
Cora turns and follows the road along a foggy mountainside. As Nick swigs from a bottle, Cora glances back at Frank, who shakes his head. Nick passes him the bottle.
Say, Cora, look what you're doing. This is the worst piece of road in Los Angeles County.
Very well,
for I must leave you.
There's a tavern in the town, in the town.
Glancing coldly at Nick, Cora grips the wheel. Their car edges along a winding cliff road.
Look at that gate. He's boiling over. You're going to ruin this car, Mrs. Smith.
Well, do you think I'd better pull over and let it cool off?
Sure, Cora. Pull over and stop. We got to save this little bus to take us to Canada.
Cora pulls over and parks at the top of a steep embankment.
There.
She looks back at Frank.
Hey, Nick, what happened to your voice? We're going pretty good, huh?
Me, and there is a tavern in the town.
Cora bites her lip. In the back seat, Frank raises a bottle over Nick's head.
I gotta come.
Nick climbs out of the car.
Nick! Hey, Nick! Nick!
Frank catches up with Nick, who stumbles against the fender.
Passing evening! Listen!
Farewell, for I must leave you, do not.
Yeah, it's an echo, yeah.
Sure, it's an echo.
Come on, let's go back in the car.
It's a wonderful echo. Yeah,
he guides Nick back into the front seat, then climbs in behind him.
I ever heard. Cora, there's an echo out there.
Listen.
Oh! See? Which is best, me or the echo?
Oh, the echo can't take your high note, Nick.
Sorry, hey, listen.
In the back seat, Frank picks up the empty bottle at his feet, casting a shadow on his leather shoes. Cora winces and scrambles out of the driver's side door. Frank steps out on the same side. As steam rises from the car's grill, Frank reaches into the driver's seat, shifts the gear, and pushes the car. Headlights on, the sedan rolls silently off a cliff and tumbles down the embankment. Frank and Cora stare down.
Stop going now. Are you sure you can go through with it?
After seeing that, I can go through anything.
All right. Come on, let's get down there. We're going to mess ourselves up so we can prove we've been in the accident, too.
Right.
Come on.
Cora scrambles down the rocky embankment after Frank. Loose dirt cascades around them as they jump down next to the dented sedan.
It's hardly smashed up at all. It didn't go down far enough.
Look, Frank, a car's coming.
Headlights cut through the distant fog.
Can they see us?
I don't think so. We haven't got a mark on us, but it's too late. You better get up there and start yelling for help. I'll get the car down the rest of the way somehow.
Cora rushes off. Wiping sweat from his lip, Frank yanks open the front passenger door and winces. Setting his jaw, he swallows hard, then climbs in and grabs the steering wheel.
No!
The car slides downhill with Frank inside. The car tumbles end over end into the fog. As Cora claws her way up the jagged embankment, a light-colored sedan stops on the side of the road. Clutching her white purse, she climbs onto the road and blinks against the blinding headlights. She runs up to the driver. It's the DA.
You can stop yelling, Mrs. Smith. Sure. I've been following you. It's too bad I couldn't have been closer behind.
Later, in the back of an ambulance, Frank lies dazed on a stretcher, his forehead bound in a white bandage. The driver backs the ambulance through a gated stone entrance. A sign reads, Mortuary. Next to Frank, a body lies covered with a blanket. The ambulance stops, and two men in white coats unload the body. Daytime. Inside a sprawling hospital, Frank lies propped up in bed. A guard sits in a chair by the door as the DA enters. They exchange a nod, and the guard leaves the room.
Hello there, laddie. How do you feel?
I'll be all right.
You're not very hospitable for a patient who hasn't had a single visitor.
There isn't anybody around this part of the country that's much interested.
Not even Mrs. Smith? Cora? Come on, laddie. You and that girl murdered her husband, and the sooner you admit it, the better it'll be for you.
You're wrong, Mr. Sackett.
How about a full confession? A quick plea of guilty, and I'll do what I can for you with the courts. Clemency for you.
You're crazy.
Would it interest you to know that I've been wise to you ever since that bathtub business?
Nick's death was an accident. Why should I want to hurt a nice, harmless guy like that I was working for?
A motive? Well, the girl herself for one thing and a nice paying business for another.
That's no good, Mr. Sackett. I never wanted to be tied down to anything or anybody in my life.
All right. Then we'll come to the real motive. That brand new $10,000 insurance policy Nick Smith took out on his life.
Frank's eyes whiten.
Here.
The DA stands up.
Have a drink of water. You'll feel better.
With a stunned stare, Frank accepts a glass.
Insurance policy?
For $10,000. And he took it out the day before you came back.
Oh, I give you my oath. I never heard about any insurance policy until this very minute.
No? Then why did you turn white as a sheet and nearly pass out?
I don't know anything about an insurance policy. You leave me alone.
You don't think I'm going to stand for that, do you?
I don't know what you're going to stand for. I don't know about it. I didn't do it. That's what I stand for.
It all started when you and Cora Smith had a great idea. Nick's had an accident. Get him to take out an accident policy.
But I left that place before Nick came home from the hospital.
And 2 days after you came back, he got killed. Oh, you were in touch with her by phone. And the day after the policy was granted, you accidentally, on purpose, ran into Nick, and what do you think? She'd already fixed up this little Santa Barbara trip, and of course, just for old time's sake, you had to go along. Then she had to see Malibu Lake. Wasn't that an idea now? Would you like to pick it up from there?
No.
No?
No.
Well, it was all planned. You crowned him from behind, then she slid out on the running board, held the wheel, and started the car. Then it was your turn to climb out, so you could both claim you just escaped in time. But she moved too quick for you. You couldn't quite make it. So she jumped off and you were caught and went over the cliff.
No, that isn't at all what happened.
How do you know what happened? You were drunk.
I don't think that's the way
it happened. You were drunk. You even thought you were driving. You don't know what happened. Wait a minute. Maybe you didn't have anything to do with it. Maybe she did it. Listen, laddie, she did do it. There were just three people in that car, Nick and you and Cora. It's a cinch Nick didn't have anything to do with it. So if you were too drunk to do it, that leaves her.
Who says anybody did it?
I do. Now, if you told the truth at the inquest that you didn't have any interest in this girl except as the wife of your boss, then you got to do something.
Do something? I don't follow you, Mr.
You've got to sign a complaint against her.
A complaint?
If you were in that car, drunk and helpless, when she sent her husband over that cliff, then she tried to kill you, too. You've got to do something about that, laddie, because somebody's going to think it's pretty funny if you didn't.
She couldn't have meant to kill me.
Now, you were drunk. You couldn't know what was going on, could you?
I guess not.
Then it was Cora who crowned Nick with a bottle. Then she slid out on the running board and sent the car over the cliff.
Well, you're saying it don't make it so.
Yes, it does, because when I drove around the bend, that car was turning over and over down the gully, but she was already up on the road yelling for help.
She felt the car going over, so she jumps.
She jumps out of a car that's turning over and over in the air and has time to stop and pick up her handbag, because I can testify she had that white beaded bag in her hand when she ran into my headlight screaming. Oh, no, laddie. Cora wasn't in that car when it went over, but you were, because you were still in it when I climbed down to the wreck. And it wasn't nervousness on Cora's part that sent that car over with you in it as well as her husband. Oh, no. She wanted that sweet little piece of property and that $10,000 insurance money all to herself instead of sharing it with you. Now, are you going to sign this complaint?
No. You got it all mixed up.
It's you or her. If you didn't have anything to do with killing Nick Smith, you'd better sign this. Because if you don't, I'll know. And so will the judge. And so will the jury. And so will that guy that gives you the business in the poison gas chamber in San Quentin. And so will the boys who bury you out there alongside all the others who were too dumb to make a deal while they still had a chance to save their necks.
Frank stares heavily at Mr. Sackett, then glances at the complaint held out before him. Taking quick, shallow breaths, Frank signs it. The DA takes the complaint, and Frank's head drops back on the pillow. Sweat gleams on his bandaged face. Sackett tosses his briefcase on the other bed, then opens the door.
Officer, you may come in.
A lean, well-dressed man enters.
Hello there, Carr.
Arthur.
Been hitting the headlines, haven't you?
Oh, in a mild way.
Do I have to get a court order, or can I see your friend here for a minute?
You his lawyer?
No, hers. Mrs. Smith's.
So? Laddie, I pity you.
For how much money?
$100 even. She's a gone goose.
That's a bet.
Of course, maybe I shouldn't take your money. Look.
Sackett shows him the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyer glances at Frank, who nervously chews his lip.
Well, I'm the poor fool that likes to play a hand without any trumps. The bet still goes.
I'll be seeing you.
Say, what about dinner tonight?
Dinner? 7 o'clock, same place. You pay the check. And give my regards to the missus.
Right.
Goodbye, laddie.
Goodbye.
Sackett leaves. The lawyer's grin fades as he pulls a cigar from his breast pocket and walks toward Frank's bed. He bites the tip off his cigar, pinches it from his tongue, and tosses it on the floor. With eyes locked on Frank, he takes a seat on the opposite bed, lights the cigar, and puffs out a swirling cloud of smoke.
Chambers, my name's Arthur Keats. I'm Mrs. Smith's attorney.
I shouldn't have signed it. I shouldn't have signed it, but he got me going. Look, Mr. Keats, would you do me a favor and tell Cora...
You shut up. I'll tell her what's good for her to know, and that's all. As for the rest of it, I'm handling it. And that means I'm handling it.
Yes, sir. But I...
You don't count now. There were some questions I was going to ask you, but since you signed that complaint, the less you know, the better.
Keats gives a smug smile and walks toward the door.
Just once more. I'm handling this. And that means whatever I do, I'm handling it.
But, Mr. Keats...
I'll see you in jail. Or, which is the same thing, in municipal court for the arraignment.
Now, in a crowded courtroom, cameras flash as Frank enters in a wheelchair, his left arm in a sling. Escorted by two policemen, a hospital orderly pushes Frank past a large wooden table that faces the judge's bench. Sackett walks around it as the orderly wheels Frank over to a row of chairs along the side of the room, where Cora sits. She sends Frank a dispassionate gaze, and he glances down. Keats enters the courtroom and strides down the aisle. Placing his briefcase on the table, he walks over to Cora and sits beside her. The judge enters.
Quiet, please. The court is again in session.
The judge takes his seat at the bench.
The people versus Cora Smith.
Keats and Cora stand.
Cora Smith, you're charged with the murder of Nicholas Smith.
She glances down.
And the attempted murder of Frank Chambers.
Steady, I'm handling it. If Your Honor, please, we waive preliminary examination since we intend to plead guilty to both charges.
Cora gapes at Keats. The DA smirks.
We're ready to appear in Superior Court as soon as you can file your information.
Sackett.
We'll be prepared to arraign the defendant in Superior Court at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
So ordered. A short recess.
The judge leaves. From his wheelchair, Frank stares at Cora, who stands rigid, gazing at the floor. The orderly, accompanied by a man wearing glasses, wheels Frank through the bustling courtroom. Frank stares back at Cora as a policeman escorts him into the courthouse lobby. Reporters, crouching with notepads, lean in. At a guarded door, the bespectacled man whispers to a policeman, who admits them into a small room. Inside, two officers rise from a table and leave, followed by the orderly. A female guard escorts Cora into the room. The bespectacled man exits, leaving Frank and Cora alone. Wearing a white skirt and blouse, Cora clutches a jacket in her hand and glares at Frank. She whips her jacket onto a chair, then crosses her arms and paces behind Frank, her jaw tightly set. Stopping at the window, she stares out.
We've been double-crossed, Cora. That lawyer Keats, he's nothing but a police stool pigeon.
I've been double-crossed, not you. Oh, I see it all now. I see why I had to drive the car, not you. And that other time... Why, it was me that had to do it and not you.
That's not so.
Oh, yes, it is. I used to say to myself the reason I fell for you was because you were smart. Now I find out that you are smart. Double-crossed. Ha! I'll say I was. You and that Keats fixed it up so that I tried to kill you, too. That was to get you clear. And then you two fixed it up to plead me guilty. Well, listen, Mr. Frank Chambers. When I get through, you'll find out there's such a thing as being too smart.
She looks up as Keats enters, grinning.
Get out of here, you stool pigeon.
Why, what's the matter, Chambers? I told you I was handling this.
You're handling it, but when I get my hands on
you... So you and this man, this so-called man, you two framed me so that I would get it and he would go free. Well, he's not going to squirm out of it that easy.
No, my
he
dear.
Was in this mess as much as I was, and I'm going to tell it to the world.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
Well, he's not going to get away with it.
He's not going to get away with anything from now on. Because I'm going to tell it all right now.
If you'll just let me handle it.
You handled it before. Now I'll handle it.
She glowers at Keats. He raises his eyebrows and cocks his head.
I'll tell the district attorney you want to confess.
He walks out. Cora whips around and glares at Frank. He looks away, and she paces back to the window. The door opens.
You, the young lady, wants to make a statement?
That's right. A statement.
A burly man enters, carrying a typewriter case. Setting it on the table, he hangs Cora's white jacket on the back of the chair and sits down. Cora continues to pace as the burly man opens the case, removes a piece of paper and a metal stamp, then starts to type.
Okay.
He looks at Cora, who eyes Frank.
Cora.
This will be a full and complete confession of how...
Go ahead.
Of how Frank Chambers and I deliberately planned and carried out the murder of my husband, Nicholas Smith. Frank Chambers and I are equally guilty. Although it was Frank who smashed Nick in the head before the car went over the cliff.
Later.
That's all. Except I didn't know anything about that $10,000 insurance policy.
She glances at Frank.
Anyway, we didn't do it for that reason at all. That's it.
The burly man lays the confession on the table.
All right. Sign here.
He unscrews the cap of a pen and hands it to Cora. She signs the confession, then tosses the pen on the table. As the burly man stamps and signs the confession, Cora folds her arms, strolls back to the window, and stares out. Her eyes shift to Frank. As he meets her haughty gaze, she turns back to the window. The burly man packs up his typewriter and leaves. Exchanging an unsettled glance with Frank, Cora walks over to her jacket and removes a pack of cigarettes. She pulls one out and stuffs the rest into her jacket pocket. Flicking open her lighter, she lights her cigarette, puffs, and snaps it away from her lips. Strolling back to the window, she blows out a soft stream of smoke, then shoots Frank a brazen stare. He lowers his gaze. Cora's face softens. She steps toward him and holds her cigarette to his lips. Looking up at her, he takes a quick drag before she snatches it away. As he exhales, the door opens and Keats walks in.
If it's the last thing I do, I'll put you out of business. There must be a law even for lawyers.
Of course, you know the district attorney fooled you into that confession, don't you? And you fell for it, both of you.
They stare at him blankly.
He planned to get you working against each other. Don't you see?
You bet I see. So when Sackett couldn't get anything out of me, he started in on you, and right away you turned yellow.
Yellow?
Keats grins.
Yellow is a color you figure on in a murder. And nobody figures it better than Kyle Sackett. That was Sackett's trump card. Once he tricked you into signing that complaint against her, he knew no power on earth could keep you from turning on him. That way he gets you both.
If you knew all that, why didn't you stop me from confessing?
Oh, I tried. I tried. But nobody could have stopped you. However, now that you've got it off your chest...
He opens the door.
Kennedy.
Yes, sir?
The burly man steps back into the room.
That confession Mrs. Smith signed, what did you do with it?
I gave it to Jimmy White to lock up in your safe like you told me to.
The two men grin.
So?
Kennedy leaves.
You mean he's not from the DA's office?
He's a plainclothes dick if I ever saw one.
He used to be a dick, but he's not a dick anymore. He works for me now. He's my gumshoe man. With the district attorney using high-pressure tactics, I had to fight fire with fire. Since you were due to spill the beans anyway, I figured you better do it to my man rather than to Sackett's.
Why, you...
That's why I said we plead guilty. So as to stop everything cold in that courtroom before you blew your topper right there and then.
Then the district attorney's got nothing against me.
No, Frank, you're not even under arrest.
Oh, sure, he goes free and I get tossed in for murder and attempt.
Unless you let me handle it.
Ha!
She drops her cigarette and stomps on it.
Listen, my girl. you're still in plenty of trouble, because we don't know exactly what evidence Sackett's got against us. From now on, you speak only when you're spoken to. And in that court tomorrow, try and look as young and innocent as possible under the circumstances. And remember, I'm the only hope you've got.
The female guard enters.
Time's up, young lady.
With a sullen pout, Cora picks up her jacket and walks out. Later in the courtroom, Cora stands in front of Sackett.
Cora Smith, is that your true name?
Yes.
Cora Smith, you're charged in information number 19X527 in the Superior Court of the State of California in two counts. Count one, murder of Nicholas Smith. Count two, attempted murder of Frank Chambers.
If Your Honor, please, we waive further reading of the information.
Very well. Are you ready to plead?
We are.
To count one, murder of Nicholas Smith. How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?
Keats glances at Cora.
Not guilty.
What?
Cora gapes, her brow furrowed. Frank sits up in his chair.
If Your Honor, please, my client protested her innocence from the beginning. Frankly, I didn't believe her. I thought I was acting in her best interest to urge her to plead guilty and throw herself on the mercy of the court. But in the light of later developments, no other course is open to me but to plead not guilty to both charges.
The DA glares at Keats.
Will the district attorney consent to a brief private conference with the court's permission?
The judge nods. With a faint smile, Keats motions for Sackett to follow him over to the prosecutor's table. Sackett eyes him suspiciously.
Kyle, you're bluffing. You gambled on getting a confession and you didn't get it. I know now you haven't got one iota of actual evidence against her, and without any witnesses, you'll never be able to prove it couldn't have been an accident. Dismiss that phony attempt charge. Change murder to manslaughter and we'll plead guilty. Providing you give a recommendation for leniency.
Sackett stares for a moment, then walks back to the table. Keats returns to Cora.
If Your Honor, please, I move to dismiss the charge of attempted murder against the defendant and to permit the defendant to withdraw her plea of not guilty for the purpose of entering a new plea.
Cora glances wide-eyed at the judge.
Motion granted.
I'm informed by defendant's counsel that she is willing to enter a plea of guilty to the charge of manslaughter, and I feel that this plea will be satisfactory to the people and would be in the interest of justice.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Cora gapes.
Very well.
Cora Smith, to the crime of manslaughter. How do you plead?
Her lip trembles. Keats turns to her. She returns his direct stare. The entire courtroom watches as she turns to the DA with an uncertain gaze.
Guilty.
As the spectators stir, Frank's eyes remain fixed on Cora.
Your Honor, please, we waive time for sentence. We're ready for sentence now.
It is the sentence of the law and the judgment of this court that you be confined in the state institution for women at Tehachapi for the term prescribed by law.
If Your Honor, please, I recommend that leniency be granted this defendant.
Mr. Sackett, it seems to me that considerable leniency has been given this defendant already.
May we approach the bench and explain the facts to Your Honor?
Very well.
Sackett glances at Keats, and they walk up to the bench. Frank and Cora watch intently as the DA leans toward the judge.
I am personally satisfied in the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, but there are many practical and legal difficulties in proving the case against her. In these circumstances, I deemed it wise to follow this course, thus saving the people of the state of California the expense of a protracted trial.
Return to your places.
The lawyers step away. Cora grips the table, her hair pinned back and curled at the base of her neck.
Having full confidence in the district attorney, I am prepared to follow his recommendation. The court summarily grants probation and suspends execution of the sentence.
Keats grabs Cora's arm and moves her aside.
That's it, you're free.
Frank stands as the female guard hugs Cora.
It's all right, Mrs. Smith. Everything's gonna be all right now.
Cora glares at Frank through her tears.
That's what you would think.
The female guard leads her away. Sackett approaches Keats.
That was a brilliant piece of strategy, laddie.
Keats nods.
Thank you, Kyle.
But you're crazy if you think I'm through with those two murderers.
Later, in a chauffeured car, Keats turns to Cora and Frank.
Well, that's the whole story. Except that if either one of you even so much as parks a car alongside a fire hydrant, Mr. Sackett will see that you get 20 years.
The burly Kennedy smiles from the front seat. In the back, Frank and Cora stare vacantly ahead. Later at the diner.
Just a minute. There's one other little matter.
Yes?
Keats pulls a check out of his wallet.
That insurance policy. This 10,000 bucks you get for knocking off your husband. Oh, sure. That's how I knew Sackett was bluffing. If the insurance company with the smartest detectives in the world couldn't find any evidence of murder, then it's a cinch the DA couldn't.
Cora reaches for the check.
Why?
In an exceptional case like this, I ought to keep it all.
He glances at Frank.
But this time, you take it. I don't want that 10 grand. Besides, I got 10 grand.
I've been trying to figure things out, Mr. Keats, and I still don't know what to say.
Well, don't say thanks. Why, you did me a favor. Look what I got out of it. I won 100 bucks from Sackett. I made him write me a check. I'm going to frame it and hang it right over my desk. Let's get going, Kennedy.
Back to town, Sammy.
Okay, boss.
Frank and Cora watch uneasily as the car pulls away. Glancing up at Frank, Cora offers him a tight smile.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Yellow. I don't know what you're going to do, and I don't care. But I'm going in and open up my lunchroom.
She unlocks the door and goes inside. Frank hurries after her.
Cora, look. Maybe you could sell the place and we can go away somewhere and start fresh where nobody knows us.
Oh, no. You've been trying to make a tramp out of me ever since you've known me, but you're not going to do it. I stay here.
All right.
He glances down.
I'm going to stay, too.
Cora smiles.
Well, let me tell you something. If you do stay, there's going to be a lot of hard work done around here because I've got ideas for this place. I'm going to fix up a nice spot out there under the trees. And then I'm going to get a license to sell beer.
You're in the hamburger business and the...
Can't you get it through your head that I'm going to amount to something? So, if you want to keep your job, you'll have this place cleaned up and open for business tomorrow morning at 7.
Okay.
She glares at him.
Okay, Mrs. Smith.
That expresses it perfectly.
Now, people sit at tables outside the diner.
Things stayed that way for several weeks. I had to watch her like a hawk because I didn't trust her for a minute. People started flocking out to the Twin Oaks just to see what she looked like.
Oh, Mrs. Smith!
A well-dressed woman holds open a book.
Mrs. Smith, would you kindly give me your autograph?
Cora brusquely signs, then hands the pen back with a glare.
Oh, thank you.
Cora turns sharply away and strides past Frank.
Popular girl, huh?
Listen.
Frank walks off. Looking toward the driveway, Cora notices two men in suits getting out of a sedan. It's Keats and Sackett.
How are you, Mr. Keats?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Sackett.
Mrs. Smith.
Something I can do for you?
Only some beer at the moment.
See?
You're pretty busy. Suppose I handle this table.
Keats takes her arm.
You shouldn't mind my handling anything for you.
Frank opens the diner door and stops as Keats leads Cora past him.
Hello, Frank.
Hiya, Mr. Keats.
They march into the diner. Frank glances toward the lawn, then turns and follows them in. He watches as they head back into the kitchen. Setting a tray of beer on an occupied table, Frank makes his way to the swinging kitchen door.
Maybe it doesn't mean a thing.
What doesn't mean a thing?
Maybe the district attorney is going to take action. He claims that folks around here are talking about you two living here like this.
Talking about it?
That's a laugh.
Is it? An unmarried man and woman living together under the same roof?
Well, in Los Angeles not long ago, they held a murder suspect, and when they couldn't hang it on him, they threw him into the can under 47 different laws.
I'm way ahead of you, Mr. Keats, and I'll handle this.
Now, at a desk, a man fills out a certificate of marriage.
Don't wipe it off, Mr. Keats. You look stunning in my lipstick.
This kind tastes good, too. What flavor do you call it, Frank?
I can't remember that far back.
As far as I'm concerned, you imagined it even then.
I'll dry up.
Frank pours four drinks and hands them out.
Thanks.
Notice his necktie, Mr. Keats. It's my wedding present to him.
Frank tugs at it.
The way he wears it, you'd think it was a noose around his neck.
Well, I can only think of 15 or 20 reasons why you two should never be happy.
Well, there you are, my dear.
Thanks. We'll paste it right alongside of our beer license.
Say, this came while you were getting prettied up. Hope it's congratulations from Sackett.
Would you?
Bad news?
You hope.
Cora opens a letter and reads it. Her face falls in a frown.
It's my mother. She's had a heart attack. I haven't been home in 3 years. Mr. Keats, would you drive me to the station, please?
Leave it to me. I'll handle everything.
Later, at the East Los Angeles train depot.
Take your baggie, sir?
Yeah. When will you be back?
A week, maybe. I'll wire you.
I'll walk you to the train.
Please, I hate goodbyes.
Cora snatches her ticket from Frank and walks off. Keats rubs his chin.
Blind man without a cane could see you're in a bad way.
Yeah.
Across the parking lot, Frank spots a pretty brunette in a convertible.
Come on, Chambers. I'll drive you home.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Keats. I'm going to see if I can't get that blonde out of my system.
He approaches the brunette, who struggles to start her car.
Excuse me. You flooded your carburetor. You'll have to wait a while.
I'm going to wait standing up.
She gets out.
It's a hot day, and that's a leather seat. I've got on a thin skirt.
I'll cool the seat off for you.
Thanks.
With a wide, boyish grin, Frank slides behind the wheel.
Name, Madge Gorlin. Address, Joe's Highway Haven. What's that?
Lunchroom.
Lunchroom? Mm-hmm. Well, meet another member of the club. You know, sometimes I think everybody in Southern California makes a living selling hamburgers to each other.
Frank turns the key.
See? It works.
Thanks. You're a genius.
Yeah, with my brains and your looks, we can go places.
Such as?
Oh, take a run down to Tijuana. I'll buy you the best Mexican dinner you ever had.
Why Mexico?
I like the food. Besides, I got a little trouble.
Trouble?
Yeah, my feet. They keep itching for me to go places.
You're an outlaw. Can't stand captivity. Me too. I get so sick of hamburgers sometimes I...
She shoots him a sidelong glance.
What time will we get back from Mexico?
He fingers the tie Cora gave him.
Well, I got a whole week. Come on, slide in.
All right.
Frank slides over and removes his tie as Madge climbs into the driver's seat.
I bet you got a little gypsy in you.
They say I was born with rings in my ears.
Well, maybe a week won't be long enough, and Mexico won't be far enough.
He flips open the glove box and tosses his tie inside. Later, on a crowded train platform, sunlight beams through clouds of steam as the engine rolls up. Cora steps off the train and smiles as she hands a ticket to a porter.
The large one with the stripes, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Cora wears a short-sleeved black dress with black gloves. Her platinum blonde hair peeks out of a tightly wrapped headscarf. Glancing around, she spots Frank. He hurries over and takes her arm.
Cora, why didn't you let me know she died?
I didn't want to bother you with it.
I feel badly you not letting me know.
Why should you?
Well, you back in Iowa, your mother dying, and me back here having a good time.
I don't mind.
When we get home, I'll give you a good stiff drink. You could use a pickup.
I'm not drinking anymore.
Well, what's the matter?
Oh, I have a lot to tell you, Frank. I think you and I are going to get along much better from now on.
Well, what is it?
No, not now. Tonight, maybe after dinner.
Here we are.
Where'd you get the new car?
A license plate reads, "You drive."
Oh.
Later, at Twin Oaks, Frank carries Cora's suitcase from the car. She hurries up the steps and unlocks the door. They turn around.
Hello. Remember me?
The burly Kennedy wears a suit and grins at them under his fedora.
Yeah, sure, I remember you.
He glances away.
Come on in.
Kennedy follows Cora into the diner, grinning at Frank as he passes.
How you been, Mrs. Chambers?
Fine, thanks. Oh, Frank, why don't you take Mr. Kennedy into the living room? I'll get you a couple of beers.
Yeah, you'll be more comfortable there.
Thanks.
How's Mr. Keats?
Me and him had a little argument. I walked out.
Yeah? Well, if there's anything we can do, just say the word.
I was wondering if you could let me have a little money.
Cora enters.
Well, I don't keep very much money here, but if $20 will help.
I was hoping you could make it more.
All right, Kennedy, what is it?
That paper. The one I wrote up for you, Mrs. Chambers.
You mean that daydream she called a confession?
Yeah. It was still in the files when I left Keats, so I took it. I was thinking maybe you'd like to get it back.
How much do you want for it?
How much would you pay?
We don't need that confession now. We might give you $100 for it, though.
Sure. I'd pay that for it.
I was thinking it was worth more.
He raises his mug and takes a swig of beer.
I was figuring on about, $15,000.
Are you crazy?
Well, you got $10,000 from the insurance company, and all that publicity's been making you a fortune. Maybe $5,000 more. That makes $15,000.
You mean you'd clean us out just for that paper?
It's worth it.
Why, you...
Now, don't start anything, Chambers.
Kennedy aims a pistol at Frank.
First place, I haven't got the paper with me.
I'm not starting anything. I guess you got us.
Yeah, but you're figuring too high.
Keep talking.
Well, we made 4,000, not 5, but we spent a couple of thousand. And I had to go east, and of course it cost quite a lot.
Her mother died.
And then we've been fixing up the place.
All right. 10 and 2 makes 12. $12,000.
The whole 12?
12,000 or the confession goes to Sackett.
Cora smiles coyly.
Well, it looks like we'll have to give it to him, Frank. It's tough, but he's got us.
Yeah.
I'll phone you at 5:00. That'll give you time to go to the bank and get it. At 5, if you got it, I'll come right out. If you haven't got it, sack it.
Cora steps close.
You know, Mr. Kennedy, it's really too bad that Frank was here, because if we had been alone, I feel that I could have talked you out of it.
She throws her beer in his face. Frank slugs him in the gut, then knees him in the face. As he crashes to the floor, Cora grabs the gun. Frank pounds him again.
All right, Kennedy, snap out of it and get your friends on the phone.
I got no friends. I'm the only one that knows...
Frank throws a left, then a right.
You gonna call your friends?
I ain't got no friends. I tell you, I'm the only one that knows about it.
You gonna call your friends?
I ain't got no friends. I tell you, I only...
Frank slaps Kennedy's bloody face, then throws a hard punch. As Kennedy tries to get up, Frank starts toward him.
Don't hit me no more! I tell you, I only got one friend.
All right. Get him on the phone. Come on in the kitchen.
All right, all right.
Cora hands Kennedy a rag.
Here.
Thanks.
Frank kicks shut the diner door.
Cora, bring the extension phone, will you?
In the kitchen, Frank shoves him toward a wall phone.
There it is, Kennedy, and make it a good story.
Cora hands Frank an extension phone.
If he tries to pull a fast one, I'll give you the sign.
Okay.
Kennedy hesitates.
Come on.
Frank smacks his shoulder, and Kennedy winces. He turns around.
Say.
Cora jabs the gun into his side. Frank listens on the extension phone.
Is that you, Willie? This is me. Listen, it's all fixed. How soon can you get out here with it? Yeah. Yeah, Chambers is on his way to the bank now to get the dough. But Willie, get this. He knows we got him, see? But he's afraid if she finds out he's going to pay out all that dough, she won't let him. You get it?
He glances warily at Frank, who nods.
Well, maybe it sounds to you like a funny way to do it, Willie, but I got my reasons. Okay.
Kennedy hangs up.
Willie's gonna bring the papers out here tomorrow. He's awful suspicious. Willie's a bad hombre when he gets suspicious.
Yeah? Thanks.
Frank punches him.
That's so you'll act right when he gets here.
Frank turns to Cora and kisses her.
And that's for playing along, Cora. I think we better open the place up. Just the beer garden. You better not let anyone inside now.
All right, Frank.
As Cora waits tables outside, a stocky man gets out of a sedan. Inside with Frank and Kennedy.
I think that's your friend Willie. But if it's not your friend Willie, I'm going to give you another going over, just for luck.
On the front steps, Willie cautiously opens the door. In the living room, Frank picks up a piece of broken furniture, then hides under the stairs. Willie enters, looks around, then notices the bloody-faced Kennedy, who shoots a glance toward the stairs. Willie draws a pistol.
What gives?
This. Keep moving.
Cora prods him with a gun. Frank clubs him.
All right, Cora, his pockets.
She pulls a paper from his breast pocket.
Here it is.
The other pockets. This is it.
Here.
Photostats. And the negative.
So they meant to keep on blackmailing us.
Yeah, but not anymore. Thanks, boys. Come on. I'll show you out. Come on!
Kennedy stands and staggers toward the door.
Come on, come on, come on, out!
Frank follows them into the diner. In the living room, Cora tosses the pistol onto a chair. Folding her arms, she plops into another chair, purses her lips, and glares at the door. Frank returns.
Well, we did it, didn't we?
He burns the papers, tossing them into the fireplace.
That's the last of the photostats.
Oh, no, it isn't.
She stands.
That isn't the last of the photostats. I got a million of them right here.
All right, so you got a million of them.
And just one of them is enough for Mr. Sackett.
Now, look, Cora, you're not going to be foolish enough to stick your own nose in that gas chamber just to get even with me.
Oh, no, you didn't understand Mr. Keats at all. Once they made up manslaughter, they can't ever do anything more to me.
What's the matter with you, Cora?
She whips out his tie.
This! While you were wet nursing Kennedy, your friend dropped in outside. So you're an outlaw. And you just love Mexican food. Well, I hope your broken-down sweetie brings you plenty of it up to the death house where I'm going to send you.
She storms out. Chewing his lip, Frank fingers the striped tie. In the kitchen, Cora drapes a white uniform on a hanger. Frank bursts in.
Just hanging up my clean uniforms, dearie.
That's nice of you.
What did you think I was doing?
I didn't think anything.
Don't worry, when it comes time to call Mr. Sackett, I'll let you know. In the meantime, you just take it easy, because you're going to need all your strength.
Cocking her head, she gives him a cunning smile. Frank glowers, then goes into the diner. Turning back to her work, Cora pauses, then swiftly follows him.
Just taking something to keep up my strength, dearie.
That's nice of you.
What do you think I was doing?
I didn't think anything.
Don't worry, when I get ready to skip out of here, I'll let you know. Just take it easy. You may need all your strength.
He swigs a drink. Nighttime.
That's the way it kept up all day. Me following her around for fear she'd call Sackett. Her watching me like a hawk for fear I'd... Both of us hating each other like poison. Finally, she went up to bed. I went to my room, but I knew I didn't dare sleep. Then all of a sudden...
He sits up in bed. In the living room, Cora holds a phone receiver to her ear. Frank rushes in.
Get away from there, or I'll...
Oh, you'll...
Hello? Oh, yellow cab? Oh, we changed our mind. We don't need a cab now. Thanks.
Or you'll what?
Sock you in the jaw, maybe?
Something else, wasn't it? You've been lying in there trying to think of a way to kill me.
I've been asleep.
Don't lie to me, because I'm not going to lie to you.
All right, I was. But were you any different? You were going to duck out of here and hand me over to Sackett, so we're even.
Right back where we started.
She turns away.
Not quite, Cora. That other girl, she didn't mean anything to me.
She told me you were going away with her.
Why didn't I? I planned to, and I'll never come back. Why didn't I go away and never come back? Because we're chained to each other, Cora.
Don't tell me you love me.
But I do.
Oh, but love wouldn't be a consent to it.
And you hate me?
I don't know. But we've got to tell the truth for once in our lives.
All right, why are we going to run away then?
I told you I had something to tell you. Frank, I wasn't going to Mr. Sackett tonight. I was running away for good, so that you wouldn't ever see me again. Mio.
Cora.
He moves toward her.
Oh, no, don't, Frank. I've got to tell you all about it. We took a life, didn't we, Frank? We
Oh, now, don't you see? We can give one back. And then maybe God will forgive us, and maybe it'll help square us.
Maybe it will. Maybe it'll help. We've been all mixed up.
Oh, Frank, I couldn't turn you into Sackett. I couldn't have this baby and then have him find out that I'd sent its father into that poison gas chamber for murder.
Was the baby the only reason?
No.
He lays his head on her chest.
Please, there's one thing I have to be sure of. No, don't ask me any questions. Just take me down to the beach. We've been so happy there, and let's be happy again. Just once more. And then I promise that everything will be settled one way or the other before we come back.
I'll get the car, Cora.
Later, on a moonlit beach, they leave parallel lines of footprints as they tread up the sloping sand.
Frank, all the hate and revenge has left me, but is it all out of you?
I'm trying to find some way I could prove it to you.
She glances out to sea.
Maybe I know a way. Let's swim out there, way, way out, until we're so tired that we'll just barely be able to get back.
How is that going to
prove? Oh, please, Frank. Come on. I'll show you.
Tossing her shimmering blonde curls, Cora takes his hand and leads him into the water. Wearing her white two-piece bathing suit, she dives in ahead of him. He catches up to her, and side by side, they swim out past the curling waves to calmer water. Above the horizon, moonlight filters through dark clouds.
This is far enough.
You tired?
Very tired. How about you?
I'm still all right.
Frank, what I wanted to be sure of was whether you trust me. If you don't believe that I can never turn on you again. And if you don't want me to go back with you, you can swim back by yourself. I'm too tired. I can never make it alone. Nobody will ever know.
Cora, don't say another word, darling. Save your strength. I'll take you.
Supporting Cora with one arm, Frank paddles toward shore. In shallow water, a breaking wave sends Cora sprawling. Frank sweeps her limp body into his arms and trudges up the beach. Later, Frank and Cora hike up a worn path to the top of a seaside cliff where their car is parked. Wearing a short white jacket and a towel draped over her hair, Cora clings to Frank as he helps her into the sedan. She smiles contentedly at him as he slides into the driver's seat beside her.
Are you sure now?
I'm sure.
She beams at him, and he puts the car into gear. As he drives, Frank affectionately watches Cora apply her lipstick.
I've been waiting a long time for that kiss.
When we get home, Frank, then there'll be kisses. Kisses with dreams in them. Kisses that come from life, not death.
I hope I can wait.
Darling.
She gives him a soft kiss. Nuzzling her cheek, Frank closes his eyes.
Look out!
The car plows into a fence. Frank falls out the driver's door, unhurt. He peers inside.
Cora.
A white lipstick case falls from her lifeless hand. Now a headline. Grand jury indicts Chambers as slayer. In court, Frank sits with Keats.
This man, Frank Chambers, and the dead woman, first murdered her husband to get his estate. Then Chambers murdered her so that he would have it all to himself.
In prison, Frank smokes a cigarette.
The jury was out 5 minutes. The judge said in sentencing me that he was giving me the same consideration he'd show any other mad dog.
I see.
A priest nods.
I see. And now, Father, comes the important thing you can do for me. Do you think she knows?
Knows that you didn't kill her?
She must know it. But that's the awful part when you monkey with murder. Somehow, maybe it flashed through her head when the car hit that maybe I did do it.
father. Do you think she knows the truth?
We can hope.
We got off to a wrong start. Somehow or other, we never got back on the right track. But I didn't kill her. I loved her so much, I tell you, I would have died for her.
Frank jumps anxiously to his feet as Sackett enters the cell.
I just talked to the governor.
The DA slowly shakes his head. Frank stares in disbelief.
But I didn't do it. I didn't do it, I tell you, I didn't do it!
Wait a minute. All right, suppose you didn't do it.
And tell the governor, get me a new trial. I'm not going to go in that gas chamber for killing her.
Suppose you got a stay of execution, a new trial, an acquittal of killing Cora. Then what? Last night, they auctioned off the fixtures at the Twin Oaks. The man who bought the cash register found a note in the back of the drawer. He brought it to me. It's addressed to you. Cora wrote it.
He unfolds the note. Frank reads it, his face glistening with sweat. Shadows of prison bars cross his furrowed brow.
It's a very beautiful note, Frank. Written by a girl who loved a man very much. I imagine it was written earlier the very night she died. A note of farewell, isn't it?
She did try to run away that night.
And since she had no idea anyone would ever see that note but you, it therefore has in it just enough of a confession to convict you of helping her kill her husband. So, if you were to leave this room because you didn't kill her, you'd soon be right back here again for helping her kill Nick. What's the use?
Frank brightens.
Then what's gonna happen to me is not because I killed her?
No, laddie, for killing Nick.
You know, there's something about this that's like, well, it's like you're expecting a letter that you're just crazy to get. And you hang around the front door for fear you might not hear him ring. You never realize that he always rings twice.
What's that?
He rang twice for Cora. And now he's ringing twice for me, isn't he?
Sackett nods.
That's about it.
The truth is, you always hear him ring the second time. Even if you're way out in the backyard. Father, you were right. It all works out. I guess God knows more about these things than we do. Somehow or other, Cora paid for Nick's life with hers. And now I'm going to. Father, would you send up a prayer for me and Cora? And if you could find it in your heart, make it that we're together, wherever it is.
The priest nods. The words, "The End," appear over a book cover, "The Postman Always Rings Twice," by James M. Cain.